Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicles Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Moira O'Neill and joining me in the studio today are my colleagues on the Personal Finance team, Leonora Walters and Kate Bealey. We're also delighted to have a special guest on the show, Alan Steele, the chairman of Alan Steele Asset Management, who'll be talking to me later. But first, we're going to be talking about investing in India. The Indian stock market has done phenomenally well since the election of business-friendly Prime Minister Narendra Modi in May 2014. But can it keep going, and is it too late to join the party? Personal finance writer Kate Bealey has been talking to India fund managers and other experts. Kate, why is everyone so excited about India at the moment?
Well, there's been a lot of excitement from the market ever since the election of Modi, who is a very kind of pro-reform leader. And he won by a massive landslide in May. And it was a real moment in history for India because his party won more seats than any party since 1984. So it's created the first government in 30 years able to rule independently of other parties. So that's really pleased the market because it gives him enormous power to push through these reforms, which he's so keen on making. Added to that, he has pledged to crack down on bureaucracy and corruption and really smooth the way for business and enterprise in the country. His biggest project is the Make in India campaign, which is all about turning India from a kind of service-centred economy into an economic powerhouse by making it a manufacturing hub. And there are other aspects, like the Bank of India being given the mandate to tackle inflation for the first time, which has really brought inflation down significantly. And Modi has been very successful in things like reducing the current account deficit, and things like increased revenue from the oil price fall has given him more room to play within the budget for things like infrastructure spending and investment in other areas. So there, you know, there's things to be excited about there.
But can it all really be good news for investors?
I mean, I think the thing is that he's obviously not been in power for that long, and there is an enormous hype around this. Valuations of some companies are enormously high at the moment. Looking at things like Hindustan Unilever last week, trading at 40 times consensus earnings for financial year ending March 2016. Its five-year average is 29 times, so that's well above. And Nestle India, 48 times consensus earnings for the year ending 2015. So you kind of think, is this all just built on expectation rather than fundamental change? And you do have to look at things like capital expenditure, and that is still fairly sluggish, and new project announcements, there haven't been that many. It's kind of really stalled in the past few years. So there are some macro things that you think aren't quite matching up to that hype.
And also a lot of growth has already come through. So investors who went into India a year ago will have done very well. And can this continue? Should you start investing in India now if you feel like you might have missed the boat a bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the issue, really. Has all this upside kind of been felt already? I mean, as you say, if you'd been invested in 2014, you'd have had a great time. There were some investment trusts that shot up by 50%. But, you know, can that happen again? Maybe not. But that said, I mean, it's still a very exciting place to be invested. And of the BRIC economies and the emerging market economies, it's arguably the most interesting and has enormous growth potential, especially, you know, compared to somewhere like Russia, for example.
Mm-hmm. But you might not want to go all in at once. So what's the least risky way to play India? You've been looking at a few.
Yeah, I mean, I think the advice coming through is that, yes, India is exciting, but it's still incredibly risky and it's very volatile. So the ideal thing, if you're not already invested in India, I mean, if you are, I think the advice is to stay there because it's interesting. If you're not, commentators say to kind of take an amount, decide on an amount that you want to put in, divide that by 12 and maybe just drop the same in amount every month, the same in every month. To kind of smooth out the risk.
And it would probably only be a small portion of your overall portfolio as well, because it is an emerging market and there are risks attached to investing
definitely.
There as well.
And you might have other bits of your portfolio dedicated to other high risk things. So that's worth thinking about. I think also important to note that it seems like active management is the way to go here. And investment trusts are a good way of accessing this market, as the managers tend to be able to spot out the value companies in a way that you might not get with passives.
Okay, so there'll be some ideas for investments in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle. Now, the exchange-traded fund sector has recently seen a landmark launch with a listing of the first UK-domiciled fund. And this exchange-traded fund is unique in offering access to an esoteric emerging markets asset class. So we're on the theme of emerging markets again. Leonora, you've been looking at this new launch. Why has there not been a UK-domiciled ETF until now?
Yes, well, up until April 2014, ETFs, if they'd domiciled in the UK, would have been subject to 0.5% stamp duty. But since April 2014, that has been abolished. Prior to this point, prior to the launch of this new fund, most ETFs listed in London have been domiciled in Dublin and Luxembourg. So, yeah, we now finally have one that has a UK domiciled. The ETF's called CBK, CCBI, RFQ, F2, Money Market UCITS ETF.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a unique fund in a number of other ways in terms of what it accesses. It's the first renminbi-denominated money market exchange-traded fund that can be traded and settled in renminbi, sterling and euros outside of Asia. This fund's going to invest in People's Republic of China government bonds, policy bank bonds, cash, central bank bills, commercial paper and corporate bonds.
Is it really something that lots of investors will want to hold in
their
portfolio?
No, it's not. I mean, it's very esoteric. And I think investment advisors are saying, you know, you could maybe have a very small allocation as a diversifier, but certainly not a core investment.
Okay, so it's something for a small part of your portfolio.
Yeah, let's say probably a large portfolio of, you know, somebody with a high risk appetite, long-term investment horizon. Definitely not just something to go and bug into your ISA or SIP.
Can you just explain a bit about the domicile aspect of the of an exchange-traded fund? That's to do with its tax status, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, domicile is different to listing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all companies listed on stock exchange also are, you know, companies and they're domiciled in a particular jurisdiction.
Okay. So, you know, although this is the first London listed one, it doesn't mean it's necessarily better because it's London listed.
I mean, I'm not a tax expert, Moira, so yeah, I probably couldn't go into the intricacies of that. What might be different here is it may be covered by a financial services compensation scheme, but I'm not quite certain how that is. I think we'll find out more about that going ahead.
And there may be more who decide to follow suit as well.
There might be. I mean, there might be some more. But I think the feeling is, I mean, providers who have funds in Dublin and Luxembourg, you know, they're very tax-efficient jurisdictions and they've got UK reporting status for their funds. So, you know, people aren't hit by a big tax bill of them. I don't think they're necessarily going to be domiciled. Yeah.
So the ETF market really functions quite well as it is
already. In Dublin and Luxembourg, yes. Yeah, it seems to.
Leonora, this week you've also been interviewing a fund manager who's a specialist in smaller companies' income. Now, this is an area that's not typically associated with the rich stream of dividends. Why do you think income investors should consider smaller companies and the funds that focus on this area?
Right, well, the fund manager who runs the fund is Marlborough Multicap Income Fund, and it's run, its co-manager is Siddharth Chand Lal. He's quite passionate about investing in smaller companies for income. He says smaller companies have the ability to grow their earnings faster and so should be able to grow their dividends faster. He also points out that, you know, over recent years, the opportunity set has widened among these. I mean, yes, historically you wouldn't associate it with income, but he says in his universe, which is smaller, mid and AIM in particular, he's got 700 plus stocks that he could invest in. And he says this is growing. There's been some IPOs lately in this area that you know, offer nice yields. These include Eurocell, Epwin and Plus 500, which he's bought into. So, yeah, he says that, you know, there's more and more smaller companies that offer this. And it obviously provides, you know, nice contrast to the usual few in the FTSE 350.
Yes. So it's a good way of diversifying your income sources, really, to look towards smaller companies. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty for fund managers to choose from.
Yes.
And great stuff. Thanks very much. This week's Portfolio Clinic features a 56-year-old investor who wants to achieve a goal of £1 million in his self-invested personal pension. He wants to do that over the next 4 years. But the trouble is that he's going to need 40% growth over those 4 years to achieve his goal. Now, Alan Steele, the chairman of Alan Steele Asset Management, was one of the experts who commented on this portfolio. And he now joins me on the phone from Scotland. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Moira.
Hi. Well, I think this reader's goal, it will be familiar to a lot of investors who want to know how to boost their retirement portfolio in the years leading up to retirement. Right. And you had some good tips there on how to do it and what to think about. One of your tips, Alan, was how to think about your portfolio in terms of Premier League or something, of fund managers.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that? I mean, who would you be picking out there?
Well, you have to start from why I said that. It's just that he said he wanted to be a bit more conservative, and one of the things he seemed to be doing was putting quite a lot of emphasis on individual stocks. And I wasn't sure how he picked them, when he picked them, what made him want to pick them. And it can kind of concern me, because I come across this, and we have long relationships with some wonderful fund managers who have long-term success rates and so on, and they concede themselves it's difficult to pick stocks and know when to get in and when to get out. And so we came across this thought some time ago that really what we were doing as advisors, apart from the technical side, helping the pension issues and the tax issues, was trying to find people who seem to outperform at different points of cycles. And it came to the conclusion that if I wanted my investments managed as I do, want them managed well, that setting it up like a football team, and I'm sorry if it's an analogy that ladies aren't familiar with, but setting it up like a football team, and if you use something like Bayern Munich as an example, which is current champions in Europe, they have an outstanding attack. But they also have a goalkeeper. You know, they don't actually say, well, we don't have to have a bother with a defence or a goalkeeper, because somebody would just keep kicking the ball from the halfway line. And so they have a goalkeeper.
So what would the goalkeeper be doing in terms of investment?
Well, he'd be saving you from losing your shirt when the market goes down. So, you know, and the kind of goalkeeper we have in mind, for example, is somebody like David Jayne, now at Mighton, he was at Darwin, or Sebastian Lyon, who's familiar to your investor because Sebastian Lyon currently manages Personal Assets Trust, which he has in his portfolio. So Sebastian is a perfect goalkeeper. And in front of that, you would have some defenders, some people who are very good even when markets go against them. And one of the people I have in mind, for example, is Neil Woodford, you know, who's been through thick and thin and tends to do pretty well in poor markets, maybe underperforms when markets are flying. But then that's not his job. His job is to stay in defence.
Yeah, and those managers that you've described are very different in their investment methodology. The goalkeepers don't just look at equities, do they? They
correct.
Look at a range of assets.
Yes, what you want is you want the most pessimistic goalkeeper you can get. the man who thinks I'm going to stick with perhaps some gold and sovereign bonds because I don't like the look of debt and so on. So you don't want an exciting goalkeeper. You want a really solid defensive, very pessimistic goalkeeper, and Sebastian fits that perfectly.
Uh-huh. Now, you mentioned Neil Woodford. Now, he's an equity income manager, which means he's trying to get a good income via the dividends of companies. And what's so good about his method?
Well, he just he is contrarian. He's his own man. He doesn't follow fads. He wasn't prepared to follow the fad of the dot-com boom and so on. He stuck to his guns. He analyses businesses and their potential and their cash flow and so on. He has been interested more recently, as per his new investment trust, in small caps, which is really interesting. But he just he's prepared to be contrarian. He's prepared to put his money where his mouth is. He's got a great record over the period. He's a bit like Warren Buffett, really, but in a UK format, as you, if you know what I mean. and that appeals to me. And it's one of our core holdings for a very long time.
So he's your top defender. Who would you have on your attack?
Who would I have on my attack? Well, that depends where you are. We try to work out where we are in the economic cycle. And if the economic cycle is starting to turn down, then you might only leave one attacker, if you follow the analogy. And if the economic cycle is getting a bit benign and you can look at the leading indicators and they're saying that things are going to be pretty good, then you would have more attackers. And right now, one of the attackers that's out of favour is also somebody that your investor seems to like, and that's Gervais Williams, who's a small cap man. And small caps have had a fair battering in the last 12 months. They haven't been scoring too many goals, so they're pretty well undervalued. And you know, I would be bringing them in perhaps as a substitute. But I like people like a tech fund. Certainly US, Angus Tulloch, funnily enough, although he's not as quite as old as me, he's still got fair legs at First State Asia Pacific.
All right, that's on the emerging market side rather than the tech, is it?
Yes. It's Asia, really. So you might have some tech fund and you might have an Asian fund out there.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider commodities? Because I think this reader had a few commodities in there.
Yes. Well, we buy research from Ned Davis Research in the US, who are arguably the finest researchers in the planet, and they don't manage money, so they have no axe to grind. And for the last year, they've actually basically turned against commodities. They believe we're in a commodity bear cycle for some years. So that would concern me. I certainly would have thought of that before. We've had natural resources before. We were too late getting out, but we're out. And I would argue that commodities only makes sense when inflation starts to come back through the system and there's no sign of that.
All right, so they've, you know, investors in commodities would have lost quite a bit of money over the last few years, and you think that's going to carry on continuing? So
probably.
Yes,
probably.
Yeah. Are there any other tips on how to boost your retirement income? I mean, this chap wanted to go from, well, to get a 40% uplift over four years. Do you think that's realistic?
Well, if the cycle does what we hope it will do, which is we think we're in a secular bull, but for equities, we think we could see returns similar to the 90s or early 90s, but there will be a correction before that, most probably, because it's one overdue, and it's a question of will he hold his nerve when that correction comes along, and that's a hard one to call. But if we're right, then that should be possible, although obviously the FCA would remind us all that units can fall as well as go up, and the past performance is no guide to the future.
you mentioned, you know, he has to hold his nerve throughout the cycle if there is a correction.
Yep.
I mean, do you find that people are able to do that when they're nearing retirement? I mean, surely there's an element of panic. Am I going to have enough to live on? Am I going to be comfortable? What do your clients, how do they behave in the years coming up to retirement?
Well, the evidence is very heavily in favour of the fact that people do panic. I actually mentioned when I replied to you initially, I mentioned the Dalbar survey in the US, which shows that consistently average investors well underperform even a passive index. And the conclusion was, it's not about charges, it's about behavioural issues. They buy at the wrong time, they chase yesterday's good idea, and when things go sour, they get out. And so it is difficult. The only way you can stop that, I think, is to have a coach on the side. You know, people like us, people like others up and down the country who hold people's hands and who keep telling them, it's education. You know, this will happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. It's probably overdue, to be honest, right now. But we think there's going to be a good time behind it. So if you've got some cash around, then it might be an idea to drip it at the moment or stay in the sidelines. But the hardest thing possible is for somebody to buy value, which is why I like the Woodfords of this world, because they are conditioned to buy when things go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you're approaching retirement, lots of people will still be thinking, I've got to get there and then buy my income and that's the end of it. But that's not the case anymore now we've got the pension freedoms coming in. I mean, how is that altering, the approach to retirement and then the years after?
Well, it's interesting. That's another interesting question, because I've just tried to devour the Milliman paper, which is prepared by one of the world's biggest actuarial firms, and it's looking at specifically retirement planning post 6th of April. Mm-hmm. And they're pointing out that responsibility and risk will now be fully passed to individual savers.
Yes.
And that people will actually need more support from advisors. Mm-hmm. And they've got four big issues. One is longevity. Because people seem to, apparently, according to their research, 82% of people approaching retirement age believe they'll die sooner than statistically they're likely.
All right. So for our reader who's 56, this chap we were reviewing his portfolio, he's going to retire, plans to retire at 60. How long is he going to live on average?
Well, he's got more than 50%. Likelihood of seeing 87.
Oh, right, yes. 27 years on, yes.
And a 20% possibility of getting to 95.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even mentioning his wife, and I don't know what age his wife is, but she's got even more likelihood of longevity.
Right, so women are still living longer than men into retirement.
I know, it's because they have an easier life.
that's debatable, isn't it? Yeah, but I think a lot of men probably don't think about their wife living longer than them.
No, they don't.
No.
Sadly, they don't, and that's a really big problem. One of the things I wanted to say to the reader, he says that when he gets to 60, his intention is to take his lump sum out tax free.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We don't think that's perhaps a good idea, because what he could do is he could take 25. He says he wants £35,000 a year. Income in real terms to spend. So he could take 25,000 tax-free cash, another 10 in terms of income, which would be less than his personal allowance, and he could get 35,000 tax-free and leave the vast bulk of his fund still growing, still creating more tax-free cash, and protected against inheritance tax till 75. And to me, that just seems something he should really look at.
Yeah, so the tax planning in itself is just as important as the underlying investments for many people coming into retirement.
I think it's more important.
Yeah, really, yes.
I think it's more important. We actually had, we have pension specialists in my office, and we brought in an outside consultant specialist to talk to us yesterday about the new changes and so on. And he was pointing out that there are now 8 regimes on a lifetime allowance that you have to look at, and a previous 8 regimes, what you had to take into account before you then give advice. So what we did was we spoke to 7 pensions technical specialists in insurance companies and asked them a specific question. 4 of them got it wrong, 2 of them were half right and half wrong, and it was only one that got the answer right.
Oh dear, that's terrible,
so
yeah.
So it's so complicated. People should not, they should... If they're going to pay any money, they should pay good money to get good advice on what they should be doing technically, and then they should be looking at the investment issues.
All right, so always tax planning first.
Absolutely.
That's a good note to end on. Thank you very much, Alan, for talking to us today.
Thank you.
You can read more about investing in India and also our reader portfolio in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle. Thank you for listening.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.